Welcome to episode 4 of All of Your Business with Michael Jonas. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents rise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. This episode brought to you by Unicorn Bake Shop, celebrating the grand opening of their first brick-and-mortar shop, February 2020. We believe delicious treats are good for the soul. On this episode, we've got comedian, LGBTQ activist, and Portland Queer Comedy Festival co-founder and co-director, Belinda Carroll. All of Your Business is hosted by creator and executive producer, Michael Jonas.
Belinda, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's so good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
How's comedy life?
Where do you even start?
So, do you probably get tired of people saying, tell me a joke?
Yeah.
You have a joke?
I mean, no.
No, we'll get there.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're one of the only people I feel is actually from Portland, born and raised.
Yeah, I was born and raised on Hawthorne. Before Portland was gentrified at all. So I was raised on Hawthorne when it was just like the Virginia Wheel and there was a Dick's Burger. No, what is it? It's a hot dog place. What is it called? Nick's? Is that called Nick's?
Nathan's?
Maybe. Anyway, Nick's and then Baghdad was a porn theater.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that.
Yeah. It was a porn theater. It had videos in the front and then it played... It played B-rate movies later, but for a while there was porn.
So, and you had an interesting childhood, right?
I mean.
Where do we begin?
No, but the thing is it's so funny because I was just talking to Nikki about this, who's my girlfriend, and we were raised the same. And so, my childhood isn't interesting to me because it was my childhood. So, like, when I talk to people that have regular childhoods, I go, oh, wow, that's weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, they're like, oh, I hung out with my sisters the other day. I'm like, why? Why would you do that? No, they're fine. They're just, I grew up, my mom was Southern Missionary Baptist and evangelical. So, all of that. I mean, so.
You have two brothers, three brothers? Three brothers, yeah. Okay.
I'm actually, a little weird about talking about my family because of the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I was going to get
no,
to that.
No, I'm, I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's so funny because it's real. Okay, so background is about, 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. Was it a month ago? Something like that.
I think it was a month.
Yeah, it might have been a month ago. I woke up from a nap because I'm napping my way to the top, and
should try to trademark that napping my way to the top.
I suggest it for everybody. I'm telling you, Reagan napped. He was onto something. It's the only thing Reagan did that was good. So was introducing naps to the populace. But anyway, so I woke up and it was my Wikipedia was done, and I didn't know that somebody had done my Wikipedia, but whoever did it went through an entire podcast and took everything and put it onto my Wikipedia. And so it's all like a crazy amount of information. But this is the thing is that when you're talking like this, you're not thinking about somebody using it on your Wikipedia later.
Someone's right now listening to this podcast.
Yes. So now I've got to think
new
about
facts about Belinda Carroll.
No, it's been like that since because when I was at the city nightclub, when I was a kid, I was at the underage club, the city nightclub. And so there was a bunch of press and stuff around the city because the city of Portland was trying to shut down the city nightclub, and it was the only underage gay club in the country. And so there was a huge backlash around it, whatever, blah blah blah. And so I ended up on the news a lot. So I ended up on the news. I ended up in Vlam Week and whatever. And so this is back when I was 19. This is 1995. And but I didn't know not to just say everything to the press. I figured they wouldn't some reading about shit. I'm like, oh man, I gotta be careful. Cause whatever. I mean, it ended up fine, but that was my first lesson. Well, that was my first lesson in talking to media. I was like, either you have to own your shit to the point that you own your shit, or you've got to be so circumspect about what you talk about. I could never do that. When I was a kid, I've sang a lot, and there was a lot. There's some interest around me, and so when I was a kid, I sang a lot in choir, and I have a good voice, and like whatever. And I had some people that were interested in doing some stuff with me and managing me, and but they were like, "You can't talk about being gay, and you can't, and you have to lose weight, and you have to like grow out your hair," and like there was like all these
and
stipulations.
Back then, you
and this is like 90.
Well, you probably didn't say anything. I mean, now you'd say,
"Oh no, I said fuck you."
Fuck you. Yeah.
Oh no, I said that.
I know you'd say fuck you.
No. This is the way that I came. This is kind of like the way I came out, was that I decided not to do that because, or work with them because, and I wasn't even working with them at that point. I was just like, it was like a, I hadn't conceptualized like anything in the actual entertainment industry at that point. So I just was like, no, I don't want to go there because I just didn't want to keep myself in the closet.
Well, does your family know that you were gay at that point, or did they find out later?
See, now, okay, so right then was kind of like I was coming out to my friends and then coming out to my family, and then I kind of considered my coming out to my mom. Like, that was kind of the... Because I came out to my friend Denise, actually over TDY, because she's deaf. And so I came out... Yeah. So when I was 14, I made friends with Denise. And so she taught me sign language, and we were really good friends. We were best friends. My mom loved it because she came over and the place would be completely silent because we were talking sign language the whole time. So she would just so she loved it when she came over. So anyway,
now the listeners know you really don't give a fuck.
No, I don't. I don't at all. And so when I came out. So it used to be, this is before the, oh, geez, this is going to make me sound 100 years old. I'm not. But this is the thing.
You had a phonograph.
This is. We did the phonograph. No, but close. There, before the internet was common, you used to have TDY, which was a relay service, and you can still do this. Like, if you are a deaf person that needs to make a verbal phone call, you can call the TDY service. But it's a relay service where the deaf person like types into a machine, and then it tells the relay person what the deaf person wants to say, and then they say it to the hearing person, and then the hearing person says what they want to say back, and then you relay it to the deaf person via this machine that had like a ticker tape at the bottom that was like, "Hey, are you coming to the store or whatever?" Right.
So did you say?
And so I had to come out.
I'm a big old dyke, and the relay person goes, "Denise, she's a big old dyke."
Kinda, yeah. So she goes. So I said, "Denise, I don't know how to tell you this." And so she's like, "Denise, I don't know how to tell you this. Go ahead." Right. And so Denise says, "You know, I'm whatever." And so she goes, and so I said, "I'm gay. Go ahead." And the TDY person just was like, and so nothing happened for like a really long time. Like, Denise didn't answer back for like a long time. And the woman, and you're not supposed to, so in the TDY conversation, and anybody will tell you this, you're not supposed to react to anything that's happening in the conversation. Like, no matter what's going on, you can be in the middle of like a fight. I have fought with my friend over TDY.
Is it because will be related as well? So you have to wait for the first message to be relayed.
Yeah. And then the person has to react back. So if they go to the bathroom or something, it can be like a gap, you know, if they did forget to tell the person or whatever, you know. But anyway, so I tell her I'm gay. So this is the thing, is Denise is a Jehovah's Witness. We're all religious. And so we're like, so I'm like, "I'm gay." And she goes, "Oh, I don't know what to say." And I was like, "Is that what she said?" She goes, no, "I'm just waiting. I don't know." She's not answering.
The relay person
she
said,
broke.
"I'm sorry."
She was like, "I support you. I'm so sorry." And like,
that's very sweet.
Yeah. So anyway, so Denise was fine. So she was just like, "I kind of knew that for a long time, like whatever." And so we had a good conversation about it. But anyway, so, and we've been friends on Facebook forever and stuff. So, you know, but that's the thing is that, so yeah, so that was just, that was just the way that it was done back then. That's so funny. Back in the telegraph days.
Back when I was born in 1921.
Which, things have gotten so much better for deaf people. It's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like, incredible. Yeah. My friend Nichelle does a vlog now, a sign language vlog, where she talks about, like, her life and stuff. She's a deaf drag queen that lives in Austin.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. Talk about people who do what they do and, you know, don't really care. That's awesome.
Oh, no, yeah, she's great.
So... you grew up in a pretty conservative type home, evangelical.
Yeah.
You're pretty opposite.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, you know, how did that work? Like, you're on the news, and your mom, would she be like, "Why are you doing this to me? You're causing me much pain."
Oh yeah. Oh no. I left when I was 17. I would just be on the news, and I don't think anybody talked about it. Like, people didn't. Like, my mom would talk to me about it, and, you know, but I was just always such an activist that I don't think they knew what to do with me. And then my mom finally came around, but that was after I came back. So she kicked me out, whatever, we got in a big fight. And so then I ended up on the street, and so I was on the street for like a year and a half. But I was like housed, and then I was like on the couches, and I had like an eat, like, when people say houseless, like, I understand that there's levels of that, and like, I was very lucky in a lot of ways while being houseless, but I was houseless. And so, but then I came back with my mom, and we made up. And then after that, our relationship was pretty good because she had time to think and like had time to like ferret through her theology from what she was taught. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and it's always great hearing examples of people like that actually do grow and actually do realize, you know, it's a choice. You love me for who I am, or you don't get me at all.
Well, I think it's important to understand that most people are, you know, multidimensional. So it's not like you're dealing with your family and then you go, oh, Linda's a dick, I'm never dealing with her again. You have to deal with the fact Linda's a dick and then deal within that social construct or not have anything to do with your family. And so it's a very like difficult thing to navigate. But you have to understand that people are layered. So they have to hear what they've heard and then process what they've heard and then change their whole orientation as far as like their thought orientation. So like if you're talking to somebody that's been like, you know, beating the Bible forever, right?
Beating the Bible. You have the best. Yeah. Shit.
But you know what I mean? Like, you know, you deal with somebody like that.
You're like Taylor Swift. You have all these trademarkable yeah. phrases.
Beating the Bible.
And napping to the top.
Napping to the top. That's my memoir name. So that's the thing is that, you know, you have somebody like that. They have to, if they have thought deeply about their religion, which a lot of deeply religious people have, then they have to think differently about their religion, which is like really entrenched in them. And so it's like that's what kind of like I try to meet people where they are and kind of educate them where they are, because I feel like that's a much more effective way to bring them over to our side.
Yeah, no.
To eventually just, trust me, just come in here. It's fun. It's warm.
And next thing you know, your mom's out there at the gay club.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
My mom's actually coming here in
April.
She
came to two gigs, though. That was pretty big.
I mean, I'm taking my mom to Celine Dion.
Cool.
If that's not gay.
That's pretty
gay. My boyfriend and I and my mom at Celine Dion.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty gay.
So
that's exactly what gay activists wanted in the 70s.
Oh, for
was
sure.
Was for you
yeah.
to go to Celine Dion with your mom. I mean,
we went to Elton John when he was here, too.
Oh, that's great.
You know, my thing, this is really bad, but you'd appreciate this. I'm trying to see people before they die.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of our concert thing now. It's like, I wanted to see Cher before she died or couldn't dance like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we saw Cher, we saw Elton John. I'm like looking for a tour of old.
I saw Cher.
I'm looking for a tour of older performers, basically. Or maybe they should all tour together. And then that way I can appreciate, because they've done so much, right?
I wish Betty White did a stage show. Don't you wish Betty White did a stage show?
Oh, I just saw Betty White's documentary.
Oh, I know. She's amazing.
I know.
She's
giving you like 20 things to watch.
No, I'm serious.
Let me tell you something. In 2020, I mean, there's the election, but if Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Notorious RBG, or Betty White, if either of them passes away, I will not be able to take it. I will not be able to. 2020 will just be like, I'm done.
No, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we're all going. That's
okay.
It. We're
so,
done.
So, you're hilarious, and you know you are.
Thank you.
You're like, oh, mm-hmm. me. Oh. So, okay, we've talked about this. You know, you're
pandering and bombastic. That's my other. Just kidding.
So, you know, we talked about boxes and fitting into things. Okay, so you're queer and you're a woman, and we have all these different labels in society, and some people like to define you. Like, tell us about that. What does that do to you? Does it make you happy? Does it drive you crazy?
I don't know. I think that I think that I can have a lot of different things. It depends on who's doing it, I think, you know?
So who tries to define you?
Well, I think a lot of people try to define you. I think that I think people try to define other people because it makes them easy to compartmentalize. This is my friend Eric, and he's a straight dude, and he works at a blah blah blah. And I think for me that happens with being a queer comic, in that people go, oh well, all you do is talk about being queer, and I'm like, no, I'm just talking about my life. You know what I mean?
Just talking about my life.
Yeah.
Just got back from Home Depot. You know,
right.
All those batting cages. Yeah, I think that you are who you are, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you, but we live in a society, right? We're going to talk about that too. You know, your Facebook wall, I say one thing and suddenly I'm racist. And we've talked about that before.
Uh-huh.
But we live in this cancel culture of... How do we show that we love, that we care about people, that we are intentional communicators? How do we have humor,
yeah,
but then deal with all these people who you say one thing, and instead of having a teaching moment or, you know, saying, I'm sorry, I don't really like what you said, let's talk about that, they immediately go, racist, homophobic, you know, anti-whatever. So how do we get away from that? How do you get away from that? You know, you're making jokes about all kinds of things.
Well, I think
sex,
that,
sexuality, who people are, you know, how does that work in our culture?
Oh, I think it works through nuance. So I think that the thing is that we were talking about gray thinking one time. And I think that a lot of people aren't taught nuance. We're in a media cycle and it's becoming more and more apparent, right? Where it's black and white, and it's divisive, and it's camped. It's like you're this camp. That's it. That's what defines you. And I think that the way that we get through that is through, and this is like accepting whatever white power people or whatever, like, I mean, white supremacist people, like whatever. Okay. So don't get on me about that, because that's, I know. Okay. But people that are open to change and open to learning and open to just different experience, when you meet them where they are and you also see everything through nuance, like everybody has a different life experience and everybody is meeting at a point where I have this life experience, you have this life experience, let's meet in the middle and talk about how we can be the same versus different.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But that is teaching people how to think in a nuanced way, and also the ability to accept like criticism too. So like it's on both sides.
Sure. And you don't have a Netflix special, and I'll say yet. But you know, it makes me think of people like Kevin Hart, right?
Right.
I don't necessarily think that Kevin Hart is homophobic. I think that he had a moment where he said something that was absolutely wrong, and maybe his reaction was not the best.
Oh, I think that he needs to like be on the apology tour about it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about is when someone who is in that spotlight says something, how do we know whether they're really genuine? How do we know whether they're growing, they're learning, they're moving forward? How do we know if they're really hateful? It seems kind of hard to tell.
I think it's by action, right? It's like maybe he went through a period where he used homophobic language because he thought it was a funny minute, right? I mean, whatever. People have been cutting their words in half for like years and people have not said anything, totes. But, you know, so, but I mean, I'm not equating the two. But anyway, but you know, maybe he did that. But the thing is that when you look back and you go, hey, that wasn't funny, it was hurtful for a lot of people, then I think that the idea is to make action toward repairing that hurt.
Sure.
And it's like, I feel like that within his apology, and I don't know everything about it, but within his apology, there was a apology. He went on Ellen, like all this stuff. But the thing is that there was no action toward repairing the hurt.
Sure, absolutely.
And so I think that that's where, and all these, and everybody.
Well, and also
but everybody fucks up.
But and also the apology may have been more about him than about the people he was hurting. Yeah. And I think that that also happens. Well, I mean, my point is I'm trying to find
Well, it must be like really terrifying too. This is the thing too, is accept this too. It's like, it also must be terrifying to have that hurled at you and have to process it and be like, oh no, I'm about to lose everything I've ever worked for.
Sure.
So, I mean, there is that too. And it's like, you know, you're working through trauma and you're working through publicists and you're working through people guiding you through it. And it's really, I mean, I'm going through a thing right now. Like, everybody is going through a thing, and like, you have to work through that thing. And sometimes you don't work through that thing well.
Well, and you are, but I was also going to say somewhere Kathy Griffin is smiling as well.
Yes. And Kathy Griffin and Whoopi Goldberg's stand-up career was curtailed mightily during Bush administration because she had the audacity to speak out against Bush.
Sure.
So like, you know, this is not a new situation.
So it sounds like you're someone though that acknowledges that they're wrong, they need to apologize and do so correctly, but if they actually are intentional with that apology, they actually grow,
yeah,
and they do deserve to have their career. You don't believe in this like you say one thing and you're done, you know?
Right.
I'm completely
well,
done.
I don't think it's possible necessarily to, well, I mean, there's exceptions. I'm, you know, like I was about to say, I don't think it's possible to just fuck up once then, but yeah, there's exceptions probably to that. But like, I think that if you make a language mistake and you can rectify that mistake, then yes. I think there's always going to be people that disagree with that and say, no, cancel, done. But I think that as human beings in a messy world that everybody gets raised in different ways and gets taught different things and have to eradicate things from themselves in order to be. But that's the thing, is that the intent has to be, and the intent has to, the focus has to be becoming a better version of yourself.
Sure.
And so like, if you're just unapologetically an asshole, then no.
Sure.
Then no, done.
Yeah,
you know?
So it sounds like you and I are kind of on the same page,
yeah,
in the gray area thinking of, we don't immediately assume this person should be banished. That's it. They're canceled.
Right.
You know, it's like, what do they do? And what is their response? And are they genuine? And are they now living a life where they actually can show us that they have changed?
Sure.
Or is this all sort of like a lip service? What did their PR person spin for them? But yeah, I mean, I
right, exactly right. And that's the thing, is can you tell that person is speaking for themselves or speaking through a PR person? Are they, do they have feeling in their, in their, you know, apology, like whatever, I don't know, but I think that life is hard and growing up is hard.
Sure.
And we don't stop doing that.
How do you deal with someone maybe being offended by you? I mean, first of all, they shouldn't be going to your show if they are, because you know, you're you, like, you're funny.
No one has ever been offended by me. No, I'm just kidding.
But I mean, what do you do? Do you, you know, do you say, sorry, I hurt you? Do you say, you know, fuck you, you came to a comedy show?
No, it just depends. I mean, for me, I've been offensive before and offended people, and I just don't work with those people again, and it's fine. I think that different people have different levels of what they think are offensive, and so you can run into that. Like, one time I did a gig, and I'll talk about it. Oh, who was it? Oh, I won't even say the organization. I did a gig for an organization, and they'd seen me. Oh, this is another thing too. Oh my God, let's talk about this. When you see somebody in a club, the experience is different than when you see them at a luncheon. And so, right. And so I did this gig at Helium, and it was super fun, had a great set, super fun. The organization got a hold of me later and said, hey, we're doing a paddle raise luncheon thing. And I had been a comic for like 4 or 5 years. And this is what you don't know about comedy, is that a lot of people don't realize this, is that as you go, you become a better comic. And so, but it takes a long time to become really, really great at comedy. And one of the very like subtle things that you learn is what to do with different rooms. And so like, depending on like, you know, like, hey, I'm going to like, maybe, you know, and
what
so
was the audience for this?
So I show up, I had this whole set in mind. I show up, I'm expecting who showed up to the club that night And who was there was like a bunch of fucking bank executives and shit, because it was like a real, it was real fucking like conservative.
Like a clutch my pearls, Sally.
It was a mental health thing. And they like thought that they should have like a word from the street about the mental health. And
don't tell me you made jokes about mental health.
No, I did, but they're about me. I mean, it's jokes I do now, but I mean, it's the same kind of stuff that I do now, but No. But the thing is that I did not realize that the audience was going to skew that elderly, and it was all like super conservative, like executive. It was just, it was a nightmare. I was just like, oh my God. And so apparently I didn't do that badly, but
Can you tell listeners like one of the jokes that you said?
No, that was like 6 years ago.
I have no idea. Okay. Yeah. I was hoping,
out of context.
Well, I was hoping.
Go online and look at my YouTube.
Your Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Read my Wikipedia. I learned so much from reading your Wikipedia.
Dude, that was insane.
You know you've made it. It literally, the Wikipedia, I mean, it almost says like, she likes this type of guac. I mean, it was so specific.
It was so specific. It is so specific. Yeah, it's very specific. Which is fine, whatever. I'm just trying to live with the knowledge that everybody's going to know everything about me all the time.
Yeah. Well,
it's a very weird thing.
It's part of being successful, right?
Yeah, I know, but now, okay, so one of the things that my Wikipedia says is that I was a dominatrix when I was 22.
It does say that. I read it.
It does say that. But the thing is, I won Miss Leather when I was 20. Not 22. And I will forever in my whole life, even if I drop out of comedy and become an insurance agent, that's my plan B.
Well, I mean, most insurance agents are probably doing something like that to get by in life. No offense
my God.
To insurance agents.
I don't know what I would do. What would I do? Would I turn that into like a selling point to doing business with me?
I don't even know where to go. I'm
like Google and read my Wikipedia and then come see me for your car needs.
Oh God. It sounds like a new business venture of insurance that industry.
Buy a split level ranch for me. I used to be a dominatrix.
I mean, there's all kinds of creative marketing right now, right?
I don't know. I was in for the outfits. I don't know. I don't feel like the thing is that I know people that are, in fact, my ex is the current Oregon Leather. But so I know people that are like super like into leather, like they're leather people.
Sure.
And so I feel like a fraud saying that I was a leather person. Do you know what I mean?
You just thought it was cool.
Well, no. I did a lot of shit. I like did a lot of stage shows. I did like a lot of stage shows.
So I have to ask you, you know, a lot of comedians, they suffer from depression.
Yeah.
I also think that most really good comedians are really brilliant. Like, they're highly intellectual because they're commenting on life.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how do you use shitty things that happen to you or things that you're intellectually curious about to write your set?
I think that I try to just stay aware. I read something a long time ago when I first started that was kind of like being a comic means both being in the moment and being funny in the moment, but then also having the antenna up to when you say something and you go, oh, that's funny, and you're able to translate that onto a page to use later. And kind of that's my process for stuff. So I feel like that I'm not... I feel like I'm a good joke writer. I feel like I'm a lazy joke writer. I feel like I don't write material. The balance is hard to do all of the things that we should be doing as comedians. So, but I will say that I look for stuff that I find in myself and find with it that is resonating with me also in society, because I like to talk about my life and from my perspective, because I feel like that's both the most honest perspective, and then also it kind of circumvents that what we were talking about earlier with with offending people, because you're able to talk about anything from your own perspective, as long as you're being respectful of other people's perspective, in my opinion, and as long as you're punching up and not down.
Yeah, I like that, punching up.
Punching down is just lazy. So I feel like that. That's what I look for. I look for the things that are happening in society that are also resonating with me, and I comment and observe on that within my perspective. I find that I don't do a ton of like very surface pop culture stuff, although I do a little bit of it now. But
yeah. Well, and you're pretty real on stage. You know, you give it your all.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. She's doing a little sassy thank you dance. So, I mean, would you say that you doing comedy is cathartic, therapeutic, kind of like it helps you get through life?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's everything. I think that so when I first started comedy, I was 32 and I had an incredible amount of stage fright. And I don't think people believe me. And I think that outwardly, I've always seemed very confident. I was talking to you about this from when I was a teenager. I've always seemed very confident. So my stage fright hasn't been readily apparent, but it was very screamingly loud in my head. And so I went through a long period of time where I wasn't able to, like, I was a singer before, I was a comedian and that kind of thing, but I was terrified of the audience. I was always terrified of the audience. And so when I got into comedy, it really opened up everything for me, because what I had to do is I had to break through and talk about, and it was terrifying for me to talk on, because I was in Texas. And so when I first started comedy in Austin at Cap City, I had to talk about being gay on stage. And I think a lot of people thought that was easy for me, but it wasn't. Because I just got fired from a band, because I was gay. And so, so I went on stage, and so I was so scared, and I was so scared for a long time, for like, you know, like a year and a half, 2 years, where I was just terrified every time I was on stage. And so anyway, so through that, I really had to delve into like why I wanted to do this, and then also my feelings about being honest on stage and really pushing through the fear of the audience in order to really be honest with the audience. And so that was like a really big process for me. So I feel like the process of becoming a comedian has really helped me in all of the areas of my life, which is why I'm always like, even if you're a open mic comic or whatever, like even if you just like, oh, I'm just going to do it like five times and I'm just whatever, do it, because like you're going to learn stuff about yourself from just exposing yourself as a solo person on stage in front of a bunch of people.
Well, I don't know if I ever told you, but I did a comedy set one time for my parents' temple.
Oh, yeah.
For a fundraiser. I'm not even kidding. For a temple fundraiser.
Yeah.
And there, you know, there in front of me is the rabbi and whoever else.
Yeah.
And it's like, do I, you know, am I going to be inappropriate here?
Yeah.
Can I talk about alcohol? It was kind of an odd sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the jokes I remember I told was, it was, why did the Jewish chicken cross the road? And it was a coupon was expiring on the other side. And I think my rabbi or our rabbi, well, I guess he's my parents' rabbi. It's not really mine. And, you know, I wasn't bar mitzvahed or anything like that. But I think they liked it. I think they liked my jokes about Ross and frugality and whatever else.
Wow.
But, yeah, I'll have to try it again sometime.
You should. Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of lawyers make good comics. I know a few lawyers that are comics. What's that guy's name? I have to think about it and tell you. There's a guy from Austin who has a joke about Putin that's like 25 minutes long. What the hell is that? Oh, it's so long. It's called the Russian poop joke. Google the Russian poop joke.
Is it not the Aristocrats?
No, it's not the Aristocrats. No, but I can't remember his name, but he was a comic in Austin. He's also a lawyer. And, the reason he's not a comedian, even though he is absolutely hilarious, I think he still does comedy, but the reason he's not like a comedian all the time is because he is a lawyer.
And he has student loan debt.
Because, yeah, I mean, no one's free.
So, you know, we've talked about your business. Your business is comedy, right?
Yeah.
Your business is being who you are on stage, making people laugh, but you have all these jobs and projects and things going on. I can't even keep up with you.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about those and kind of give me some clarity on that? So, you know, you have Outlandish, you have Portland Queer Comedy Festival.
Oh, yeah.
You were, I think, just given or not yet an award by the governor for being an advocate for women and for gay rights.
No, that was from the, all the things. I just got an award from the Oregon Women's Commission for the Woman of Achievement Award for the state of Oregon.
It's fabulous.
So it's it was a surprise.
When you told me about it, you were like, "Oh, I guess I'm getting this award."
Yeah, and
me, okay.
Yeah, and I guess a bunch of people nominated me, so that was interesting. So that is going to happen in March. I think that I go and I get, I think there's a luncheon or whatever.
Just it's you an and Kate Brown, you know,
yeah.
Living it up.
Yeah, yeah. So I get it from Kate Brown, and I'm excited about that. I'm excited about her. I love her. And I think I was too exuberant with the Women's Commission people. And I was like, I love Kate Brown. Well, you've met Nikki. It's the same thing, yeah. Only with Kate Brown instead of Earl Blumenauer. And
oh, my God. Girlfriend.
Oh, my God. No,
when we had Earl Blumenauer, congressman, at our house.
So,
she said, oh, I feel like I'm at Disneyland talking to you, congressman.
Yeah.
You made my life. I was thinking all day about you, what to wear. I don't know why I gave her. A southern accent.
I don't know why you made her sound like that, but she really she's a native Oregonian, and she's done TV and shit. She was a camera person at KPTV and stuff, and so she's been involved in the news for like ever, and so it was really a treat for her to meet him. So yeah. Anyway, so it was fun.
Oh, she loved it.
Oh yeah, she was great. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, but yeah. So the Kate Brown thing will be fun, and then I have Outlandish, which is at Kickstand Comedy, the second Saturday of the month, and that's my queer variety talk show. It's kind of a late night format where I have the artists do what they do, and then we interview them. So like I have burlesque dancer do burlesque, and then they go and they put their clothes back on, and then they come back out, and then we interview them, and I have an activist usually, an activist guest come on and talk. You came on one time, and talk.
So much fun.
It's a really fun show, and so it's and we dance and we like whatever, and I used to dance a lot, so I dance and we I try not to make it
you,
like
when I was on, you spilled a bunch of shit all over the stage.
I spilled a Red Bull. It was very exciting for everybody. I almost electrocuted myself live on stage, which no one will be surprised if I go out that way. But yeah, so it's real fun. And then now I'm the producer of Laugh Lounge, which is the Laugh Lounge app show at Curious Comedy Theater. And that is an awesome venue on MLK at 5225 Northeast MLK Boulevard, that is going to be the new home of Portland Queer Comedy Festival, along with Cruise Room Annex. A couple other places. So that have yet to be.
Tell us about Portland Queer Comedy Festival.
So Portland Queer Comedy Festival is a extravaganza of queer comedy. No,
and the theme is,
it's
give
the,
me a ball theme.
It's the first multi-stage, multi-day queer comedy festival in the United States. We are this year at Curious Comedy Theater and Cruise Room Annex and a few other places on Alberta to be named. And it is a festival where we bring 50 comics in that are queer identified from all over the world. And then we perform for 5 days in 30 shows. And so it's various themed showcases. It's national people that you've seen on TV last year with Nico Santos from NBC Superstore. We also had Scott Thompson from Kids in the Hall, as well as Aaron Foley, who's now writing for One Day at a Time, and D'Lo, who's this amazing Sri Lankan comic who's incredible. You should look him up. So we bring in like all of these comedians and throw a big party, basically. It's fun.
And that's in July, right?
Yeah. It's July 16th through the 19th.
I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm excited about it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of All of Your Business featuring Belinda Carroll of the Portland Queer Comedy Festival. We're going to take a moment here to thank our sponsors. Naive Melody Vintage Shop, Located in historic downtown Oregon City, Naive Melody is an ever-changing, eclectic assortment of all things vintage, cool, beautiful, and strange. Find out more at naivemelodyvintage.com. Today's show is also brought to you by Mighty Epiphyte. They can help your business grow, get certified, and increase impact. Visit us for more information at mightyepiphyte.com. And now back to our conversation with Michael Jonas and Belinda Carroll.
So, do people think it's strange you're a comedian? You know, everyone has, like we mentioned you doing insurance, that would never happen. But like, if you're in a group of people and someone says like, you know, I'm an English teacher and I'm, which teachers are amazing. You know, everyone's like, I do, what's a profession? Well, I'm a librarian.
No. I'm an accountant.
Like, and then you're like, you know, I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
What do people say? Is that, do people go like, sure you are.
Oh, no, no.
I'm a comedian too.
No, everybody always buys them a comedian immediately. I mean.
Well, you're funny. But do people ask you questions like, what's that like? Are you out late at night every night? You know, are you performing in bars every day?
Yeah. I mean, people don't usually know. Usually, actually, what they do is they assume that you perform at one place. I don't know why that is. No, I'm serious. And it's universal. People have no idea about comedy, and they think that the only place that comedy happens is in a comedy club, and they know that there's one comedy club. They know, yeah. And there might be four comedy clubs, and it doesn't matter where the hell you are. You could have eight comedy clubs, but everybody, unless you're in LA, everybody knows about the one comedy club, and that's it. And so you go, they go, oh, what do you do? And you go, oh, I'm a comedian. And then they go, oh, where at? And I'm like, well, wherever the fuck people are paying me to be. Like,
Sherry's Pie Shop.
Yeah, I don't give a shit. The laundromat, I don't care.
Yeah.
And so
that's not a bad idea for you to go on a tour at like non-suspect places.
No, there's
car washes, there's shows pie shops.
There's already shows like that. There's already,
not today.
I don't need to, no. So people will just do that. And then they also just will be like, tell me a joke, and I fucking hate that. So.
Which is what I did at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Like, fuck you. Why'd you do that?
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's situational humor. Jokes will rise, right?
Right.
So, what's your take on other comedians? You know, obviously, you share the stage with people. Do you like other comedians? Are they nice? Is it a pretty supportive, you know, rise? The tide
no.
sort of deal, or is it like a cutthroat? Like, this is my stage time, bitch, get away.
Well, right now I'm in kind of a thing, so I feel like it's pretty cutthroat. I feel like the base of comedy is supportive, and I feel like a lot of people are supportive, and I feel like it's also an industry that attracts people that are cutthroat and also will do anything to get to where they want to be. And so, or they will do anything to get the money of the person that, you know, and so you have to protect your ass. So, but I think that also there's a lot of really kind, supportive, awesome people that are looking to create an art form that elevates.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's like anything else. I think it's like politics or law or anything else.
Well, it also seems
and it's also just a competitive thing. Like, if you think about it, like I was thinking about, you know, the festival, you have 155 entries, right? But you really only have, you know, X amount of people that are going to be accepted for room purposes, right?
Sure.
So you just have that. So it's like it's a very competitive thing, and you can either use that competitiveness together and create a good community with it, or you can, you know, stab each other. It's up to you.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about this earlier about defining yourself.
Yeah.
Do you feel like people, they immediately expect something? So they go like, oh, she's a lesbian. She's going to make jokes about this.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And sometimes they're right.
It seems like it's maybe more representative now. I mean, I'm seeing trans comics. I'm seeing more.
Well, that's the thing that the festival taught me is that, like, you know, I feel like I started the festival because in a lot of ways, when I first started, not a lot of ways, but in most of the ways, when I first started, I had Ali Rawlison and Holly Lorca in Austin with me, who were lesbian comics. And then when I moved to Portland, there was no one. It was me and Whitney Street. We're the only queer comics in town. We tried to start a queer and open mic at Krakow Cafe. It was Whitney's mic. And we
Krakow Cafe?
It was the Krakow Cafe.
Krakow.
Krakow. Like Krakow, Germany. Krakow. Okay. So anyway, that's exactly how long it lasted. And so the what? It's a women's mic? What? And so we had this women and queer open mic. That lasted like 8 or 9 open mics, and it was me and Whitney and Virginia Jones, and that was it.
And was this, you know, everybody talked
about...
And this
is 2010. Okay. This isn't very long. Yeah.
I was thinking it was like around the time Ellen came out.
No, this is like...
You know, and everyone
I didn't start until I was 32.
Yeah,
I didn't start comedy until I was 2008.
Everyone was talking about Ellen, you know, and so my wonder was like, do people think, okay, I'm exactly like Ellen. Like, people want you to be... whatever they know as the female comedian.
Well, I feel bad for people with Ellen's hair. Like, I don't even know how you're a comic if you also have Ellen's hair. Like, that would be so hard.
Don't tell Justin Bieber.
No, I mean, Kristen Key, if you're listening, I'm all my love. I'm just kidding. No, we're talking to her for the festival.
When you start talking to Kate McKinnon, you tell me.
Well, if I can... have everything happen than perhaps
in my life that I've ever wanted.
Yeah.
So I have 5 questions for you. These are the 5 questions I ask all of our podcast.
Okay.
Yes. So the first one is, if you weren't doing this business, what would you be doing?
Insurance agent. I think we already talked about it.
You are fucking kidding me. No.
No, I don't know, man. I guess I'd be singing, maybe. No, that's kind of the same business, right? It would be sales, probably. I mean, that's what I did before.
What would you sell?
Oh, I don't know. Whatever the hell people would, yeah, I mean.
I've never heard someone say that they would sell sales as a choice.
I mean,
or just, do sales as a choice.
I'm really good at sales, so it doesn't matter what the hell I'm selling.
I would love you on like a variant of QVC, like QVC for real people.
Yes. They'd be like, look at this fucking thing. You can like. You're in your kitchen and you think, God damn it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I just pulled up a knife and I go, this will solve that.
Instead of like set it and forget it, it'd be like, put this shit together, bitch.
Get your fucking shit straight, man.
You'd like leave the QVC set, go to the grocery store, get a grocery store chicken.
Like,
this will do.
Chicken.
So, if you had a celebrity business partner for your business now, who would it be?
For my business, my current business?
Yeah, so like, I mean, it could be your comedy manager.
It would be Julie Goldman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
Because she's very, very funny, and I don't know. As far as partnering on anything, because she has a really sharp mind, and she's really real in the same kind of way I am. And then she's also super brilliant, but she doesn't really realize that she's brilliant. And she's good at implementation of creative ideas. And she's, like, very funny.
Awesome.
She worked with Kate McKinnon on the Big Gay Sketch Show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
If you could form a squad of people dead or alive, who would be in that squad?
Aretha Franklin. Wait, what am I squatting?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What's the purpose of the squad?
Well, it could be anything. You know, it could be group therapy. It could be eating together. It could be advice.
Oh, I thought you meant like an apocalyptic.
Wine
like,
tasting. Oh, no.
Taking over the world.
Well, you're going to want to be with a coupon queen if it's an apocalyptic situation.
Yeah, I know.
Someone who has, you know, a garage full of laundry soap.
I would do, Aretha Franklin, Gandhi, because why the fuck not, right? Ray Charles. Who else would I do? Oh, dead or alive, right?
Dead or alive.
Oprah.
That is quite the group.
Wouldn't that be, you would go that, you'd go to that party, right?
Yeah, Luke or I would go. Absolutely. Right? I don't know. Everybody would upstage each other.
And then Mark Maron, because he would ask everybody really good questions.
When you reach a certain level of success, what's your splurge or guilty pleasure purchase?
Oh, my God. I'm going to have food in my fridge every day. It's going to be real good. I would buy a Tesla.
Me too.
Yeah. That would be my thing. That.
I'm waiting for, like,
I buy Tesla, but I would make it an obnoxious color, like purple.
Like a Prince purple,
yes.
Or purple, yeah. I'm waiting for electric cars to be used and affordable. I can't wait. It's coming up.
Yeah. We're going to own electric cars in 2035. That's when I'm going to be able to afford an electric car. It's going to have like one cell left that's just like poking along. It's going to be like...
In like 2035, you'll have a 2007 Prius.
Yes. That's exactly right. Yep.
So, what local or national businesses would you like to give a shout out to?
Oh, all of them.
Everybody.
Yeah, everybody. Let's do it.
No, CVS, Walgreens.
No, but CDC Dispensary, which is over yonder up the street. And they're the dispensary that's sponsor the festival. And Clean Karma Gardens, which is our marijuana sponsor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They sponsored your high.
They sponsored my high. They always sponsored my high. Mark's good to me.
What about like a favorite taco shop or something like that?
What did I eat the other day? I ate Cha 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 the other day. It's Milwaukee, which is really good. And their burritos are like seven burritos in one. It's like
Cha Cha Cha. They have one on Broadway, and then they used to have one.
Oh, yeah, they do have one on Broadway.
They used to have one on 22nd, 23rd, somewhere over there.
Oh, right. They make a good burrito.
I don't know why I had a picture of you. I had a picture of you dancing while eating your burrito.
That should be my show. It's me just dancing and eating a burrito. It's the whole. Eats a burrito. And when you just like, I just talk about whatever.
Let's do one of those.
Rainbow Tax. Jack's at Rainbow Tax. Because if I don't, then Jack's going to be like, why don't you shout me out? And I'll be like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, Jack's is great.
Jack's is awesome.
Yeah.
And welcome to PDX.
But you
just
were
like all
about
the Portland Queer Comedy Festival sponsors, just so none of them get mad at me. Chopsticks.
You were talking about dancing and eating a burrito, and it made me think of the Super Bowl halftime, and I was like, maybe you could do that next year.
Oh, yeah. My friend Jim just got on ESPN for eating a raw potato at a game of some sort of sports ball game. That was in Seattle.
Did
maybe
he
a
choke?
Seahawks. No, he was just dancing. Jim is the most. Jim is amazing because Jim is working on a Oregon Trail documentary about the Oregon Trail video game, and he has interviewed all of the founders of the Oregon Trail game that like originally did the code.
Didn't they all get dysentery?
They all got dysentery. It was very sad at the end. That's what the end of the documentary is you've died from dysentery. No, so, but no, I did the show. He did a show that was an all Oregon Trail material show. And so I did that show up in at Bob's Java Jive, which is a teapot in Olympia that is a building shaped like a teapot.
I was going to say, what the fuck is a teapot?
It's a building shaped like a teapot that was built during the motel-hotel boom of, like, the 50s when people first started, like, really getting cars. And so they used to have, like, novelty buildings that people would stop at, like, on the highway or whatever. Bob's Java Jive is one of them. It's the craziest place. It's circular. It's got this cool stage. And Jim did a Oregon Trail a show there with all comedians talking about the Oregon Trail. And so,
what do we need to know about Oregon Trail that we don't know?
Well, the Oregon Trail, the game, is hilarious and fun, and it's also in that green and black old MS-DOS pixelated thing, and it's super fun. I don't know. What do you want to know? That we all came over in the Oregon Trail and that we all gentrified the area and that downtown Portland used to be a Filbert washing station for Native Americans until the white people showed up and went, oh, it's flat, and then just moved in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're
bad people.
We've really
fucked everything up.
On African Americans, Native Americans.
Yeah.
Oh, What a way to end a podcast that was so full of joy.
Are we ending the podcast there? We're just like, nah, racism. And that's it. We're done. Well, genocide. You know, but seriously, get the kids out of cages.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, whatever. I feel like that.
Well, Jesus wouldn't want that.
Well, I mean, no. But also, I mean, nothing that's happening right now is Jesus driven. Even if they're saying it's Jesus driven, it's certainly not. I mean,
yeah.
Jesus cages little children. Like, it's not good.
You should go on one of those.
Oh, the children of the world. Anyway.
It sounds like you need like an evangelical tour.
I do. Of like all. Oh, my God.
Or like your own Book of Mormon sort of deal.
This is what I have to say. Is that I'm clinically depressed, according to my therapist. But I think that if you are not clinically depressed, there's something wrong with you at this point.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they say if you don't care, you're not alive. You know, like you're not breathing.
Yeah, I feel I feel good during this time because I feel like everybody's been brought down to my my cynical nihilism. I'm like, finally, it's paid off.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You're dark, but you're lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Keep working hard. Keep being yourself. You didn't talk about the Dyke March either.
Oh, yeah. Dyke March is happening in June every
year.
It's
always happening.
Yeah. My friend, not my friend, but she's very nice, Francine, is running it right now along with me and Shaylee Howard. But I just wanted to shout her out because she's incredible, and she really has breathed new life into Dyke March. She's been doing an Instagram. You should follow us on the Instagrams at PDX Dyke March, and follow me on Instagram at Belinda Carroll Comedy. No, just Belinda Comedy. And then PDX Queer Fest for the Queer Comedy Fest for the PDX Queer Comedy Festival. And Outlandish is going to get an Instagram in a couple of weeks because...
You look so excited to update.
Oh, my God. I mean, if anybody's interested in doing social media for free and also a lot of, like, you're great, like, you should contact me because, I mean.
Well, there's more to that. I mean, they'll get, like, front row seats, maybe.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm trying to think of what else.
That's it. You get tickets and the ability to work for me more. That's it. Ask Jenna. It's not. There's no ups. There's no. Follow Jenna with a smile. She's my social media person for the festival. She's awesome. Okay.
Well, kids these days, they don't work for intrinsic rewards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody works for money anymore. What are we doing? We've automated everything. Jeff Bezos owns everything.
Jeff Bezos.
I'm telling you. I mean, this is the thing. Okay. So this is the thing about Jeff Bezos is that you have to know that if you earned enough money that your own employees work full time for you and sleep in their cars, that it's time for somebody to look at your income and maybe look at giving you less tax breaks. I mean, for the love of Christ, you got people like literally working at Amazon. I just did a house cleaning gig with this girl, and we were doing we were talking about it, and she was like, she lives in her fucking car and she works for Amazon. And I'm like, how is that possible when he has enough money to last like 57 generations?
Yeah. Well, and there's that issue, and then that goes along with the affordable housing issue as well.
Oh, I mean, well, no, I mean, but one is the other, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you that people make the same amount of money right now than they did in the year 2000.
Yeah.
And it's like, but the housing.
Yeah, prices have increased. But
my rent in the
not.
Year 2000 was $750 for a 2-bedroom house.
That hurts my soul.
Well, I know. So that's what I'm saying, is that everybody's making the same amount of money. And our housing is triple the cost. It's just, it's concerning. So instead of leaning on racism, let's end on homelessness. Let's just do it.
Thanks for being here and making me smile and cry. Well, there she is, folks. Belinda Carroll. Dark as fuck.
I mean...
A very big thank you to Belinda Carroll of the Portland Queer Comedy Festival. For more information on the festival, LGBTQ resources, and how to get involved, visit portlandqueercomedyfestival.com. Thanks again to our sponsors, Naive Melody Vintage Shop, Mighty Epiphyte Consulting, and Unicorn Bake Shop. Mention this podcast at the new store, and they'll give you a free cupcake. There's more information at unicornbakeshop.com. And of course, a big thank you to you, our listeners. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming service, share the episodes, and visit us at allofyourbusinesspodcast.com.